KABC Talk Radio 79.
25 years of exploring new worlds, new ideas, and new people. Years of entertaining conversation, stimulating information. Join the Celebration 25 with
Bill Jenkins.
Welcome to a Saturday night on KABC, an open mind. And that's what we're going to do for the next 3 hours. Open your mind, open my mind, and see what we find in there. At the moment, I think you won't find too much in mine. It's going to be one of those nights, gang, as I came down to work. I brought all of the information for our good friend and our guest for tonight, Mr. Robert Monroe, the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences. And our subject was the out-of-body experience and his fascinating new book called Far Journeys. I brought everything but Bob's telephone number. So we are now busily trying to wake up my wife. It's sleeping some distance from the telephone because the telephone number is right there in my briefcase. Meanwhile, we're going into our files around here, so we're just kind of waiting to try to get a hold of Mr. Monroe. He is back in Virginia tonight. He was going to try to be with us tonight. He couldn't be because of a change in his itinerary, so we were going to do it on the phone. We did want to talk about his new book, Far Journeys, and I do recommend it to you very much. It's a fascinating look at the work that they have been doing with the explorers at the Monroe Institute. We were also going to perform this little experiment, have the explorers come here during the show, look into some boxes of that were sealed, and only the skeptics who were there knew what was in the boxes. And in talking to Robert Friday, he's not going to be able to do that either tonight. We will do that sometime in March or April, as everything is just kind of falling apart on us tonight. So until we find Bob's number, or get my wife to give us the number, we will just have open lines here and talk about anything that you may want to talk about. Let me give you the telephone numbers. In Los Angeles, 520-TALK, T-A-L-K. We will get through to Bob. Don't worry about it, but just it's just very embarrassing at the moment. 520-TALK, T-A-L-K. The Los Angeles number. The San Fernando Valley number is 990-TALK. All the numbers, of course, end in TALK, T-A-L-K. In Orange County, it's 750. In the Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena area, the number is 244. San Gabriel Valley is 448. And South Bay, your number is 679. And if you're down in the Long Beach, San Pedro, Paramount area, your number is 639. Now, we were to talk about the out-of-body experience. I'm not one to talk to you too much about it because I've never been able to do it. I have tried. I have gotten close. We have John and Karen Erickson here in the studio. They were a couple of our skeptics who brought down the box to be gone through by the out-of-body travelers. Have either one of you gone out-of-body? You have?
Yes.
Karen?
Yes.
You have gone out-of-body?
Yes.
Where did you go?
Not very far.
Hit the red button there.
Here?
Uh-huh.
Is that it?
There you are. Get close to a microphone.
Here's the microphone.
Where did you go?
Well, I didn't really travel any place. What happened was I was getting ready to go to bed, and I sat on the bed. John was already in bed. I don't remember if he was asleep or not. And as I was laying down, and I was not asleep at all because I wasn't even in the bed yet, I suddenly realized, and this sounds crazy, but I and this is in another place where we had high ceilings, high beam ceilings, I was on top of the ceiling. And I was looking down at myself, getting into bed, going to sleep, and John already laying there sleeping. And I knew what it was, but it freaked me out.
Made you feel like a peeping Tom.
I don't know if it made me feel like that exactly, but I just suddenly went, it frightened me a little bit, even though I knew what it was, and I really wanted to be doing it. But at that exact moment, since it wasn't planned, totally unexpected, it frightened me, and it snapped me right out of it, and then I was back in the bed before I knew it.
Ah.
And I've tried and tried to do it again, and I haven't been able to.
You've never been able to go out since?
No, it was spontaneous, totally.
A lot of times it is a very spontaneous thing.
And I wish
that
it would happen again.
People.
They say it happens to a lot of people who are in great pain.
Yeah.
Who want to leave the pain behind.
Push the red button there, Bob. There you go, John.
Well, I've heard people tell me that people who are in great pain,
mm-hmm.
and with some terminal illnesses or something that where they're very, very uncomfortable, they will leave the body so they don't feel it.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because next week Diane Morrissey will be here with the near-death experience that she has been doing so very much research into. And this does happen in the near-death experience. It is a type of out-of-body experience, I think, where they do come back when perhaps they most likely thought they were going to go on beyond.
We had a friend of ours who explained the whole accident he went into with a head-on collision with a truck in Italy. And he saw the truck come. And suddenly, he was catapulted out of the truck before the crash and was up above, looking down, and saw the whole thing happen. And he was telling himself, this isn't my time yet. This isn't my time. I'm going back. And he went back. But he remembered seeing everything and everything happening up there.
Spiritually, he was up there.
Yeah.
Or his consciousness was up there. His body was not in the wreck.
Yes. Yes. And he didn't experience any of the pain or anything during the time it happened until he got back down again.
It happens to runners also. As they are really pressing and getting beyond, they'll move out of their body just a little bit. I've had runners tell me that they've watched the back of their head as they're running along.
Gee,
I've heard that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've heard that. It's not happened to me. I've done it.
And that stops a little bit of that pain that happens, you know, from exercise. Pulls it out. So the out-of-body experience is a fascinating thing. And perhaps you have some questions about it or some things that you want to relay about it as we do the best we can to wake up my wife and get Bob Monroe's number so that we can get him on the telephone, because I know he's standing by in Faber, Virginia, to talk to you tonight about his new book, Far Journeys. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. We got the number, and we have Bob Monroe. Bob, how are you?
Fine, Bill. How are you?
Well, I came down here with all the pieces of information I should have had except your telephone number.
I wondered about that.
However, we do have a diligent staff. Ron Carr and his group, they went to work and found it. We were unable to arouse my wife, who was sleeping at home by my briefcase, wherein was the number.
Well, at least it worked somehow, did it not?
It did. And you're on. And we're so delighted that you're with us tonight. The book, Far Journeys. There are some journeys in there that are unbelievable.
Got a chance to read it, then.
I had a chance to get into some of the journeys. I'm going to go back and finish it. We're talking about your explorers dealing with people who are living in different levels who don't even understand what physical life is all about.
That's right.
So why don't we just kind of go from the beginning about who the explorers are, how that's operating, and what they're doing, and why we're doing all of this.
Well, there's many questions involved that you're putting there, and one of them is why we're doing it. First of all, I can't properly answer why we're doing it. To say the least, about in 1975, I would say, we began a rather intensive series of training of specialized subjects in a laboratory. The outcome of that is a group, an ongoing group of people that we call explorers, and we call them that simply because in one form they're very much that. They are exploring other states of consciousness and other reality systems, utilizing some of the methods and techniques that we've developed over the years. What else can I say except that the best way that one gets a feel for what they encounter is to say that it is the most difficult type of material to translate into a time-based reality. And one of the main problems, therefore, is to help these explorers learn how to do that, to translate what they perceive and do in this out-of-body state into a form that we can understand here now. So that's the beginning anyway.
Well, that's the beginning, and I think a lot of that happened because you, for some reason or another, just decided to inadvertently jump out of body, and that began to fascinate you.
That's quite true, and this goes all the way back, of course, to 1958 when I was quietly minding my own business, running a company in New York, and then began to inadvertently start the whole concept or the whole business of moving out of my body. And from that, trying to find out which way this is, what it is, first of all, by going to our normal mental and psychological, psychiatric interviews and probing, tried to find other answers, and we're going all the way back into 59 and 60. The result was very negative. The first response was, well, I am all right physically. The best answer was that I was very sane, so I must be doing conscious dreaming. And the parapsychologists in 1960 said that it was very interesting, but they had no data. Another recommended that I spend some 10 years at least over in India at some ashram studying under a guru who purportedly might know about such things. Being somewhat of a stubborn sort and having some R&D funds in my company, I said, well, let's see if we can do something about this at a Western level. As a result, I began doing R&D, that is research and development, into this concept of what is this out of body. And that began a long evolution, which ended up where we are now, I suppose. And first of all, I guess it was back in 1970, 71, I published a book called Journeys Out of the Body, which spread throughout the world in terms of an information distributing thing and an inquiry thing as to what other people were doing in the out-of-body state. And so that went on, and it's still going on. And then here came a book called Far Journeys.
Well, you know, Bob, of course, Journeys Out of the Bible is, or Out of the Bible, Out of the Body.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, Out of the Bible. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks, I guess, around here. Is one of the more definitive works, I think, until Far Journeys came along.
Yes.
We're going to pause right now and going to call you back. Our line is not as good as we'd like it, so we're going to try another circuit, okay?
All right.
And continue on with our conversation tonight with Robert Monroe, founder of Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences. Their prime function there is to do research and development and exploring in the out-of-body state and about the out-of-body state and what that's all about. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Robert Monroe, the founder, president of the Monroe Institute of Applied Sciences, and what they do at the Institute, and they have been doing for many years now, is to very seriously and scientifically investigate this phenomenon known as the out-of-body experience. And indeed, they're explorers, as they are called, who get into a Faraday cage and out of body they go. And they go to wild, wild places. And finally, Bob has released some of the information about where they have been going and what they have been doing in his new book, which is just now hitting the stands, called Far Journeys. It is a fascinating piece of reading. We had Bob on the line. The line was not all that good, so we're trying to reconnect with him right now. And so we can hear him better. It was just a little difficult the way it was before, and he has so many fascinating things to say to you. I think about one of the most fascinating of all subject matters that we can get into. Bob, let's try that line. Are we any better?
Well, we've tried three others. How's this?
Well, that seems a little bit better. It
all
is better.
Right.
Okay, let's go on. So after Journeys Out of the Body, your enterprise has grown quite a bit there.
Yes, primarily as a result of a number of different discoveries that we've made along the way. And we hesitate sometimes to call them discoveries. It's simply perhaps a synthesis of many old ideas put into a new form. We're not sure. But in essence, we developed methods that in turn helped improve human consciousness. And we have been using those in a number of different ways. Primarily, it's a non-invasive technique of application of sound to create a frequency following response in the human brain. And in developing and evolving this, we found it very efficient to help change human consciousness. In the simplest form, we can help people go to sleep or help them stay awake. And you take everything in between, and you see what we have.
That's your hemisyncing process.
That's right.
Well, it does work. My son just obliterated his knee here this last summer.
Oh, gracious.
And in that cast, I gave him those hemisync tapes, and I says, because he's having a hard time sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, maybe you can do something Dad has never been able to do, Ross, and that's go out of body. But he went through the entire program there. He hasn't told me whether he went out of body or not, because if he did, he probably wouldn't want to hurt my feelings, because, Robert, I have not been able to make that trip yet.
Well, one of your problems is a very fundamental one, and that is that you can't get your left brain out of the way far enough. And I often suffer with the same problem, and find that there I use a very simple technique now that makes it easier. Obviously, it won't take brain unless you get about 2 sleep cycles, which is, say, 3 hours sleep, and then awaken after that, not forcibly, but of your own accord. And there you are, deeply relaxed, wide awake, rested, and it becomes quite easy to detach yourself from the physical at that state.
Mm-hmm.
And simply roll out. That's the best way I know of for anyone who has difficulty in such methods.
I am going to do it.
No. You got to understand why you want to do it, first of all. Why would you want to do that so badly?
Well, it's, you know, if I talk about it, I like to experience everything that I bring forth here on these microphones, from walking on fire to doing all of the other things that I get involved in.
Well, my offer still goes, Bill, and it's been a couple of years anyway, but if you can break out from that mad, wild activity of yours and drop back here for a short period of time, I think that's the most productive thing you could do to get into some of these more advanced states of consciousness, that's all. And come back and be my guest. I'd love to have you.
Well, I'm just going to take you up on that one, because I think that's the only way. Kevin Ryerson, when he was in trance here, a trance medium, went into trance, and Tom McPherson, who has lived 400 years ago, comes through and talks through Kevin. You read about him in Shirley MacLaine's book, Out on the Limb. He said that I used to be a terror on the astral level, and I had been grounded.
That's a pretty good
thing. Yeah, I was on probation. Felt like I terrorize everybody here on this level.
Oh, well, that could happen, you know.
So
it doesn't mean it's bad. You see, that's you that says it's bad.
Well, no, I just have been grounded, that's all.
No, they just say that you just get into an interference factor, and so if you interfere too much, well, somebody says, we can't have that passed around, and so they set up barriers against you.
Get back to California and stay there for a while. what are, you know, the fascinating things that the explorers are finding, and there are so many questions that I'm going to ask you and that I know the audience wants to ask you too, Bob, but let's start first. In the out-of-body state, there's more to it than just tooling around the neighborhood, is there not?
Well, slightly more. First and foremost, I think this is the basic problem. One has to sort of rearrange your belief system in order to properly work in such an area. This is perhaps the greatest, and the underlying that is a fear barrier, which is the biggest inhibitor beyond that. And you have to overcome those two factors before you can do anything in something called the out-of-body state. How do you do that? Well, think of yourself as you are right now, in spite of what you may consciously or left brain desire. You're much as if you're in a clearing, and that's your area of knowledge and experience. And that clearing is in the middle of a great dark forest, and that's the unknown. And you have an inherent instinctive fear of that unknown. And that's generated by the culture in which you live, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
And that unknown and that fear of it is certainly the major barrier. And the means that that we employ to circumvent that fear is something that is worth discovering and using. And this is why any other methodology will not work unless you get to that point where you no longer have the fear. Paradoxically, the next, after you have overcome fear, you have another fat barrier, and that is you can't get too excited about it. You get too excited, all of a sudden you lose control of this out-of-body state, and back you come.
Now, that I have experienced. Yeah. Now, I have gotten very close. I have felt the rushing sensation. I have felt the sort of quaking thing that you talked about in your first book.
Mm-hmm.
And I get so excited and say, hey, I'm getting ready to go, that I wake up.
That's exactly what happens.
So how do you overcome that, Bob?
Well, you have to sort of approach it obliquely, the best way is sort of, oh, here I am. I'm just in the process of lifting out. Isn't that interesting? Not exciting, but interesting. It's a different approach. And then simply let it happen.
Of course, now I've got the idea the cops are going to be over there waiting for me, saying, you ain't coming over, boy. Back now.
Well, you can have a nice stand-up conversation with anything like that and find out it's not nearly what you think it is.
I'm sure it isn't. What are the explorers finding out?
Well, what are they finding out? Where can you possibly start? Bear in mind that all of our work has been dealing primarily with human consciousness in the belief that improving that consciousness will therefore improve man's understanding of what he is, who he is, why he is, and then as a result of that, he will then so improve what he is, what he's doing in his future.
Mm-hmm.
So we deal in consciousness, and we don't try to detract or alter consciousness. We do our best to enhance it, which is a great difference. Because you can't report anything if you lose that part of consciousness that you have now. And that's another part. This is, again, part of a instructional procedure. What are we learning? Well, first and foremost, we learn that there are three methods that one can use in communication, and we did learn that there is a method of communication that is paramount to it and to any communication system with anything other with other states of being than the physical human, and that requires what we call nonverbal communication, where words are not used. And this is again, words can be used, but they're so limiting that you have to learn this other method of communication, which we call NVC, or nonverbal communication. It's much as if you totally experience instantaneously all of, if I communicated to you what, that I have a sore big toe, I can say it in words, but if I can send this whole thought to you, as it were, of having a sore big toe, you'll know instantly all the feelings about it. And you'll know what I mean without any words. And this is the fundamental of other intelligent communication. It doesn't deal with words and figures and numbers and things like that.
But just the sum total of thought.
That is correct. So
right.
This is one of the things that we learn, is that we have to make that quantum jump in the way we communicate. And anything less than that is like listening to two notes on an infinite scale. And those two notes are totally inadequate to describe where you are, what you're doing, and what you're perceiving, and any information that you gather. Now, the information that you gather in such out-of-body states or such communication is of a cosmology that, for the most part, is not not in keeping with what we understand in terms of time, space, physical universe, and patterns like that. It's from an overview that is so, I don't like to use the word alien because it's really not that, but it's from a perspective. When you were to see the Earth, for example, from the Moon, as our astronauts did, they obtained an entirely different perspective of the Earth than the people who are now on it.
Mm-hmm.
This is much the overview of time space that you begin to receive the information from, that type of perspective. And it's most fascinating how it comes out.
As I recall, In our previous conversations, your explorers usually go at least in pairs.
Not usually, but occasionally is a better word.
Occasionally?
Yeah.
They have to learn to communicate then non-verbally with each other.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And after they get over that hurdle, I guess they can go on. What are some of the more interesting places that they have journeyed to?
You got to remember that we, this is the play, has been the play part of our work, with such exploring.
Mm-hmm.
Play in the sense that we do other things, and then when we want to play or to have release from the type of very slow, systematic, pedantic type of effort, exploring or investigating, given workable parts of sound frequencies and other supplementary means of improving consciousness, we need a break. The break then has been just as so many humans.
Mm-hmm.
We have the hope and did have that there was other intelligent life, quote, out there. And so we began to look for it. And for many years, we had no results whatsoever. It seemed a very sterile physical universe. And it was only until we began to change the belief system of not only our subjects, our participants, our explorers, but also we ourselves, the conductors, the monitors of such experiments, did things suddenly open up for us. And then after that, it was a very, very busy universe.
You did find other life out there then?
Yes, very much so, but not in... there was no local... local intelligent life, such as on Mars or something like that.
Far beyond that?
Far beyond that. We run into physical intelligent life.
And physical life like ours?
Yes, but not humanoid.
Okay.
If you ask me how these other intelligent physical beings were, it's very difficult because we automatically assume that intelligence has to follow a humanoid form. And as you get over that, the classic case that we had was where one of our explorers encountered what seemed to be a large elephant, and that's the way he perceived it. And he was very wary and careful about this elephant because he was so small compared to it, when suddenly the elephant winked, and that changed the whole pattern.
A winking elephant might change anyone.
Yeah, well, it at least implied a consciousness that he certainly didn't think was there.
What kind of information was he able to find in dealing with the large thing that he perceived as an elephant?
Well, in that particular case, it was just a sort of a friendly interchange of ideas about the structure of the universe and the patterns of development, how it originated, this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Was it really a big bang or what? And most of such physical beings did not know much more than we did in that respect. They had some insights that we did not, but for a cold turkey, appraisal and say that the Big Bang Theory is what it is and it just happened. They were somewhat beyond us, let's say, in that. The real gold mine material began to occur, of course, when we began to encounter intelligent beings who had never been even human in any form before. And that's where it became fascinating.
Were they in the spiritual realm most of the time?
Well, you use the word spiritual, and we're not quite sure what you mean by that, you see.
Non-human, or non-physical.
We call them other energy systems. Which are non-physical and are beyond space-time, is the best way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have found that this is far more common, such communication, than would ordinarily seem. Evidently going on a much broader scale throughout the world. The fact that it's not reported doesn't have any meaning at all. Organizations either misinterpret it or are too conservative to report it for what it really is. And that's a nice way of going out on a limb, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Might as well get out there and just kind of sit on the edge of it a little bit.
As long as we don't saw it off.
Don't want to do that.
No.
But we certainly do want to open some minds to the fact that this is going on.
Yeah.
That we do have the ability to move outside of our physical selves, to take our conscious energy or our spirit, whatever you may want to call it.
Well, take, for example, the piece of information on how this is suddenly means within the last 10 or 15 years, mushrooming to a very great degree. Our publishing people in New York say that they have received over 300 manuscripts within the last 2 years that deal with information gathered through so-called channeling sources and means similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there have been over 300 just in this publishing firm alone, and imagine what that might be on a larger scale.